to Inside Scoop Live. Hi, I'm Irene Watson. I'm your host for today. Well, today I'm really delighted to be speaking on the phone with Chip Wagar. He is the author of a historical fiction book titled An American in Vienna. This book is Chip's first novel and contains some autobiographical elements. He attended the Austro-American Institute in Vienna during his college years at the George Washington University, where he actually graduated in 1979. Chip is a frequent international traveler and has visited Vienna and Austria many, many times. He is also, as you will hear in this conversation with him, very knowledgeable of history, especially that of World War I, at which time his novel is set. Chip has been a litigation trial lawyer for over 30 years and now concentrates his practice in medical malpractice and product liability in the city of New Orleans. Hi, Chip.
Hi, Irene.
Well, it's fun to talk to you. Vienna, you know, when I was doing some research on your book and preparation to be talking to you, I reflected back to when I had actually visited Vienna, and it's a beautiful place. I just remember the scenery and people walking hand in hand slowly.
It really is a beautiful old European city that goes back actually to Roman times, and it is an interesting city from so many points of view, architecturally and historically. And actually, as you may know, the city is in part an inspiration for the book.
Mm-hmm. And this is what I was going to ask you. Why did you choose to use Vienna as the inspiration of the book?
Well, a couple of reasons. As Europe goes, I think the farther toward the middle and the east of Europe you go, the less Americans know about it. And I think, sort of the big three, London, Paris, and Rome, are kind of, I hate to say overworked, but plenty of books and movies are written about those cities. And I thought that Vienna was really worthy to rank up there with those cities, but just because of its location, it's less well known, and it might be more intriguing to American readers. Another reason is I went to school there and know the city well, and thirdly, the historical period that I wanted to write about has also received a lot of literary attention with regard to the. And I'm speaking here about the beginning of World War I, the battles and the war itself from the Western Front is well known, but not so well known the Eastern Front. So I thought that it might be interesting to readers to look at this period from the point of view of Vienna and the eastern part of Europe. And actually, a lot of the feedback I've gotten since the book came out is just that. People knew very little about it and were very curious as they went through the book to learn about this area of Europe.
Well, definitely. Your book is also educational because although it is fiction, you use a lot of real locations, and also part of that is autobiographical.
Well, it was very... a lot more difficult to write the book than I thought in that respect because of the research that I found myself continually having to do. The book is fiction. The story of the characters was in my mind, but underpinning it with just enough accurate history to make it realistic was sometimes a real challenge and led me into some very obscure areas of European history.
I bet it did. I'm very interested in genealogy myself, and so I did, I've done a lot of research, and I know that that's something that you also incorporated some of your own genealogy in this, and it's amazing what we do find when we start digging, isn't it?
Well, it is. With the rise of the internet and sites such as Ancestry.com and so forth, it's made it easy, much easier for people to trace their genealogy back sometimes centuries. And then when you find these distant relatives and ancestors in these unusual places, you begin to wonder about them and who were these people and what did they do? And if you don't know that, At least you wonder what was going on back in 1740 or 1670 when these people lived or in some cases immigrated to the United States.
Exactly. And from what I understand, that you actually went back to Vienna and did find some of these relatives.
Well, almost. I actually have traced my own ancestry back to Austria into the 17th century. I think I've got back to 1640. But I am not myself in contact with the with any part of my Austrian family since the American branch immigrated in the early 1700s. But the inspiration for me was my Dutch ancestors who immigrated to the United States in the 1860s. And my family has kept in touch with the part of the family that remained in the Netherlands over the last century, and I've maintained that position, that tradition, and have actually visited them at their home in this case, in a little town called Heino in the Netherlands. And one of the scenes in the book, the main character Andy Bishop is with his mother in the kitchen, sort of. With this big piece of paper unfolded on the table, and Andy's mother has been tracing their ancestry back, and she makes the connection with the Austrian family that's also in the book. And that scene is a replica of a scene that I had with my Dutch relatives as they spread out this huge paper on their kitchen table and showed me, you know, our common ancestor and their family line and mine, and then the common family line that went back actually into the 1700s and 1600s into France.
Isn't that interesting?
It really is, and I did not know, you know, exactly how and when that our family had come to the United States. You know, I guess in most families there are legends and rumors about your ancestors, that somebody knows this little piece and somebody knows that little piece, and you know, you sort of put it all together at moments like that.
Yeah, and for me, when I was doing the research, and it was just like there was some, I'm not even sure how to say this, but all of a sudden I started getting roots. And it's like, because there's always some question, like, where did I come from? Who are all these people? What, you know, what's going back to these generations? But then when you start putting everything together, they just see, you can get this story or a picture of, you know, going way back.
Well, you can. And in the case of Andy Bishop in the book, he and his mother discovered they were related to somebody who was extremely famous and a very monumental figure in European history. And this is a real thrill, I think, for those of us who, you know, who take the trouble to go look at your ancestry, when you discover you're related to someone you've actually heard of in history or can look up and find information about.
It is so true, because when I was doing my husband's side, and he goes way back to, I just forget, it's like year 36 or something, and goes through the royalty, and it's like, wow, you know, but so far removed, but still it was just really exciting. So why did you decide to write a book about an American visiting Vienna in 1914? I think what you said just before the World War number one.
Well, here again, it's somewhat autobiographical in that I was once a young American visiting Vienna, although my time there was in the 1970s. But I kind of know the wonder that an American has when he goes to Vienna for the first time and sees this splendid city, and just walking around the monuments, the palaces, the fountains, the, you know, the landmarks that he sees stirs in you this wonder, wow, who were these people and what happened and when was that built? And you want to know more about the place. So, but the period, 1914 is the, I think of it as sort of the hinge of history, the old world passing into the new world, both in Europe and in the United States. The Edwardian era that began in 1901 with the death of Queen Victoria and basically ended in 1914 was a sort of a unique period in which there are a lot of modern things. Automobiles had made their debut, telephones, railroads, the Industrial Revolution was well along by that point, and many things that we can identify with today as being essentially modern. But on the other hand, it had one foot in the past. Monarchy was still the predominant form of government in Europe and in the world, with the vast European colonial empires in Asia, Africa, and even in North America. Monarchy, aristocracy, and things that today to us would seem very old indeed were still around. Mm-hmm. And this juxtaposition of modernity with the ancient old order was something very unique at that time, and it hasn't been written about as much as other periods in history, and I've always been intrigued by it, and this seemed like a good place and a good time to write about.
Definitely, and Chip, what parallels are there between the terrorism, let's say, that was sparked in the First World War in Europe and the terrorism today that was sparked in the U.S. engaged in two wars after 9/11? There seems to be some parallels there, and I'd like you to kind of go into that.
Well, I think that there are some parallels. Terrorism, which we think of today as a modern or postmodern even phenomenon, is actually not. The period around the turn of the last century was rife with assassinations and terrorism. The anarchist movement was very predominant in Europe and in the United States. In fact, we had a president, President McKinley, was assassinated by an anarchist in 1901. Several kings and prime ministers of Europe were likewise assassinated by nationalists or anarchists. The difference in 1914 was that the terrorists, the assassins, if you will, that murdered the Archduke Franz Ferdinand and his wife in Sarajevo, were state-sponsored terrorists. They were organized, equipped, smuggled over the border, and housed in safe houses to, you know, await the day when they could act by high officials of the Serbian government, who deliberately did this to provoke a war, and they succeeded in doing so. And it was the ruination of Europe and of the civilization that existed at that time. Maybe war was not the best move that the Austrian government could have made at that time. Now we go to 9/11, and we have terrorists that are sent, you know, to the United States, conspiracy, very much like the Serbian terrorists. An outrage is perpetrated in the bombing of the Twin Towers and the Pentagon and the hijacking of four airlines and so forth. Our reaction to that was very similar to the Austrian reaction. It was that something had to be done, and something was going to be done, and something very strong was going to happen, and it resulted in, as you say, in two wars that followed. Now, whether we've been more successful than the Austrians, we're a lot more powerful a country than Austria was, but time will tell whether the, I think I saw the other night, $1 trillion has been spent on these two wars.
Yeah.
And people will have differing opinions whether we should or shouldn't have done it, but one has to ask that question, you know, is going to war for something like this really the way to go? Mm. And that's a question I think that Austria answered much like we did all the way back in 1914. The results for Austria were disastrous. For us, I suppose time will tell.
Yes, it will, won't it?
And we'll be back with More Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. I'm Juanita Watson, the host of the show, and invite you to join me as I bring to the air both well-known and upcoming writers. You will hear my guests talk candidly about their books, their life experience, specific topics, and the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, my intention is to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are syndicated and archived for availability 24/7 through direct podcast and MP3 download. And as always, I love to hear from listeners. Have a look at our website, InsideScoopLive.com. Send me an email, comment on previous guests, and let me know who you'd like to hear on the show. I'll do my best to bring you your favorite authors live and direct.
Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Today I'm talking with author Chip Wagar, and he has written the book, An American in Vienna. As you've heard so far, Chip has shared some very, very interesting information and thoughts. So stay tuned because there's just so much more. And if you'd like to check out his website at this time, it is anamericaninvienna.com. And we seem to forget our history, don't we?
Well, we do. And there's an old saying that those who ignore history are doomed to repeat it. And I have to say, having traveled quite a bit in the world, and I think there's several reasons for this, but of all the great countries on the face of the earth, ours almost has a national amnesia. It seems that we Americans have a very poor grasp of history and the impact that events that occurred sometimes even 100 years ago can have on us today.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I think for one reason, history doesn't have to be so important to us. When you live in a small European country surrounded by other European countries in a very dangerous environment, as was the case in 1914, you had better know history and you'd better know what's going on because it could, you know, at any moment lead to the destruction of your society, of your country. The United States has enjoyed the luxury of being sort of isolated with two oceans on either side of us. And, you know, our history, some moments of our history, we have some grasp of the Civil War, perhaps the Revolutionary War, you know, these sort of moments. But you know, now, today, the United States, in an era of globalization, of the Internet, of instant communications and so forth, we're really not so isolated anymore. And what happens in a different part of the world, in Asia, China, Japan, Europe, can almost immediately affect us. And it's a very unusual situation. And our sort of national amnesia, I think, really, really hurts us now.
Do you think that because of this amnesia or lack of knowledge of history, that the Americans actually do have misconceptions about the First World War? Go ahead.
I think they do have some misconceptions about it, if they have any conception of it at all. And again, that was one of my inspirations for writing the book. World War II is the subject of innumerable movies and books, the Cold War, espionage, the Soviet era. World War I, not so much. And that's interesting because the Second World War and the Cold War that ended in 1989, not that long ago, really sprang from this sort of from the First World War. That was sort of the source of all that came after. And it's very surprising. Most Americans have very little understanding. Most Americans would tell you that we got into the First World War because of the sinking of the Lusitania, for example. And that's simply not true. The Lusitania was sunk 2 years before we entered World War I. And had, while it did produce a lot of anti-German feeling in the country, that wasn't the reason that we got into the war. And we also have the idea that we got in it because we were fighting against, you know, sort of police states and dictatorships. That's not true either. That was true in World War II, but not World War I. In World War I, there aren't really any bad guys and good guys like World War II. World War One was much more sort of morally relative, if you will.
Mm-hmm. So with World War Two, do you think that that was just sort of a continuation of World War One, with sort of a reprieve in there for, what was it, about 20 years?
I do. I think that there are many, there are few reasons for this, for the start of World War II. One of them was having a unique individual like Adolf Hitler in charge of an extremely powerful country. But the most fundamental reason for World War II is the Versailles Peace Treaty that was imposed after World War I on the defeated countries of Europe. And it's sort of a colossal blunder following a colossal blunder. The First World War really didn't need to have happened, and the Versailles Peace Treaty that followed it simply, again, set up the conditions that allowed the Second World War to come about only 20 years later.
Right, right. I have a tendency to agree with that, too. So, you know, the wars just are ghastly. There are so many people that are killed, and the consequences, and, you know, but it just seems to each war as it escalates from back from World War One to on, and, you know, we're talking about the Vietnam veterans and the Gulf War, and even now the people that are coming back that have been deployed, it's devastating. It's devastating not only on the military, the soldiers themselves, but also on the families.
Well, it really is, and I'm not a pacifist, and I do think that there are occasions where countries have to use military force to defend themselves, for example, or in genocide situations. I think the world has to act to save innocent people. But I think one of the things that became apparent in World War One, or began to be considered for the very first time, was the psychological damage that is done to young men that are put in these positions, horrifying positions. And I tried to bring that out in my book. There are several scenes of that describe in detail the suffering and the casualties of war in World War One. You know, in World War One, the British, French, and Italians lost more soldiers as casualties to death and maiming injuries than they did in World War Two. It's a little known fact. Millions died. Entire generation really died in World War One, and the horrors of trench warfare, mass attacks against machine guns and barbed wire, and so forth, in some ways make the military contest in Europe in World War One even more horrifying than World War Two. It's really destructive, and I think today, for the first time, psychology and psychiatry have advanced to the point where we really understand and then think needs to convey to everyday people the immense psychological damage that is done to 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds that are sent into these horrifying situations, and they never come back the same again.
You know, I reflect what you said. My father was in the World War II, and I do recall as he was getting older and before he passed, he kept reverting back to his time, you know, and probably a little bit of dementia and so on, but he was always going back and reliving his time in the military and the stories, and he kept talking about these stories. And so, you know, psychologically, he never got over it. It was always there. He succeeded, and as he got older, it was really starting to come to the surface. And this goes back to World War II. And, you know, and as you say, now these people that are coming back, and fortunately, there is psychological help for them, but there wasn't in case like in my father's case.
Well, that's right. Some people will remember the movie Patton, and in the movie, Patton almost loses his job when he slaps a soldier who has had basically a meltdown, and is unable to return to combat, and he calls him a yellow coward and so on and so forth. And in those days, that would be, you know, the middle of World War II, there was even then a beginning to recognize that some young men just couldn't do it. You know, it was just too much. And you know, of course, we've advanced much further than that today, and we have a volunteer army, so that I suppose helps in a way. But that phenomenon of participating in a ghastly situation of war is impressed on the minds of very young men. And in the case of World War I and World War II, which spread into the civilian populations, many of the young people of that era, even if they weren't soldiers, experienced some horrific things that, you know, when that happens to you at such a young age, it stays with you. It scars you really for your entire life.
Well, exactly. It's an imprint that stays with that person, but also then it starts imprinting the generations to follow. And, you know, unless that person does get that help, which sometimes is just not available, this goes on for generations.
Well, it does. And sort of going back to something you said earlier, if you are a veteran who's gone through a war like World War I, and you've been in the trenches or you've been fighting for literally for years, and you return home, and you're on the side of the winning powers, like the United States. Mm-hmm. You know, one can think of the lost generation in the United States, and the sort of period in the 1920s of emigre authors in Paris and so forth, so Hemingway's A Farewell to Arms and so forth. That was a feeling from the winning side. In Austria and in Germany, you had the same miserable experience and terribly scarring and transforming the personality changes. And on top of it, you are on the losing side.
Yeah.
And that, if people will understand that concept, is an explanation for Adolf Hitler, who was such a soldier and who had been on the losing side and who had experienced the horrors of war and in addition saw his country or countries lose the war and wanted to do something to tip the balance back in their favor.
And, of course, the balance really tipped.
It really did.
Yeah, it sure did. Well, Chip, gosh, this has been really interesting talking to you, and I know that our listeners are really interested in this and also are going to look for your book, An American in Vienna, which, listeners, as you have heard Chip, he's very, very knowledgeable in his history, and, of course, that's all portrayed in his book. So please do check it out. And also, Chip is available on his website. And, Chip, would you please tell our listening audience what your website address is?
Well, I'd be glad to. My website address is the name of the book, www.anamericaninvienna.com. And if you go to the website, you will see a lot of the backstories behind the book. And, of course, most importantly of all, how to buy the book.
Yes, definitely. It's all there. And it's a great website. I have to tell you, I'm looking at it right now, and it's very creative, very creative. So
and it even has music.
Exactly. It does. It does have music, and it's great music, and it just puts you right into Vienna immediately when you go to the site. So, listeners, you have to check it out. And as Chip said, their website address is anamericaninvienna.com. Thanks again, Chip. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you.
And there you go, listeners. Do check out the book. As I said, An American in Vienna. A reviewer really loved it. And also check out his website. Thanks for listening. This is Irene Watson from Inside Scoop Live. Bye for now.